Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my super special guest, Ivana Popoff. Now, Ivana likes to describe herself as someone who writes poetry and works with young people. Welcome, Ivana.
Hello.
Hi. I'm interested, you didn't want me to call you a poet. Why is that?
I suppose I said that because I feel like an artist is defined by the necessity to create art, and I just enjoy writing a poem once in a while. I don't have this burning urge to write poems. They just come.
Okay. That's really interesting, because most writers will always say exactly the opposite, won't they? Like you've just said, they say, I can't live without writing and I have to write, and yeah, it's a burning passion, come what may, I need to do this. And I think it's really refreshing and honest that you say, no, I just do it when the mood takes me.
Yeah, mostly on the bus. Yeah. I spend a lot of time on the bus, and I see a lot of interesting characters and listen to their conversations. And that's where most of my poems come from, actually. So yeah, I don't feel like a poet in a sense. I don't need to.
Okay, I think your audience might disagree. I think your audience are very
maybe
respectful of what you do and enjoy what you do very much. Mm. And I think they would definitely class you as a poet.
Okay, well, I will happily take that title for this hour, maybe longer.
Okay, fantastic. So your inspiration comes from people watching, people listening?
People, definitely, yeah. Eavesdropping, staring at people, probably for an uncomfortable amount of time.
Awkward.
Awkward. And just, I guess, when I find something that is really small and mundane that I feel might be forgotten or never noticed if I didn't write it down. So, I don't know, the other day I was at the bus stop and I noticed like a children's game, like in the bin, with a bit of milkshake on it. And I stood there staring at it for about a minute because I thought, I don't know, there was something about it. I thought, probably no one else knows that it's there, so I need to write a poem about that.
So it's the way your mind works, which is quite different, isn't it?
It's the small things.
Like, but life is all about that, isn't it?
Mm.
And then I think when someone like you, a poet like you, puts that emphasis on it, shines that spotlight on that item or that person or that thought or that emotion, other people can then recognise it quite quickly.
Yeah, and appreciate the
so
things they might not
in a
notice.
Way you've highlighted something that is common to a lot of us, really.
Mm.
So do you have anything right now that you'd like to share with us, a special one, perhaps more recent?
Yeah, I do. I've got one that I wrote really recently, and it's called Sticking Around for the Kicks.
Okay.
And it's really about all those little things, all the little everyday things that, you stick around for. Okay, shall I just begin?
Yeah, Joe? Just begin, okay. Please.
I get a kick seeing large families dress their kids the same and sitting at the front of a double-decker bus. The fleeting smell of bread rising, or hot grass, bacon frying, or wood smoke, or that overpowering old lady perfume that hits you when you're out walking. I get a kick out of elevators, escalators, and lifts, and choosing not to take them. Men with high voices, and bus drivers that say, "Darling." I get a kick watching the cashier twitch as I count out loose change. I get a kick thinking that the trees know everything and that as a collective we're heading for total oblivion. And I get a kick watching women struggle with my soft, hairy legs illuminated by the sun. I get a kick slicing vegetables really slowly whilst my mother rips through the kitchen. And I get a kick when I see a bird pooing on a really shiny car. I stick around for the kicks. I stick around for the kicks, I do. I'd be long gone, ash and dust, without them. I stick around for the kicks, and I stick around for my brother, for holding and swaying, for feeling the warmth of his strong, boyish chest, and feeling like the luckiest girl in space, in the glow of our silent understanding. I stick around for watching my granny smiling amongst the tomato plants, and for her watery hazel eyes. I stick around for the kicks, I do. I stick around for the kicks. I'd be long gone, somewhere on the bed of the Atlantic Sea, without them.
Oh, thank you. Again, that is just full of so wonderful imagery and little, like you say, there's very small moments that we can all relate to.
Yeah, smells and...
Yeah, and people and familiarity. Just that tiny... The fabric of life, isn't it? We all think it's about the big things and we wait around for the big things.
Yeah, they never come.
They either never come or when they often do come your way, you think, is that it?
Yeah.
Is that what I was hanging about for?
Yeah.
waiting. But you say I get a kick from, but you don't get a kick from champagne, as in the famous old song, I get a kick from champagne.
I don't know that song.
Oh, it's so old.
No,
you wouldn't, because you're very young. Thank you, Eva.
<Sorry. laughs> I get a kick from unknowingly insulting people.
No, I like the women noticing your sort of downy, hairy legs, I think you described them as.
Oh, do you know, I had a feeling you might note that down.
So, because you're a redhead, aren't you?
Yeah.
And so you just leave it all...
Yeah, I just think it's a terrible waste of time. Life is so short. I don't want to spend time...
No, I don't...
On that.
I was going to say defibrillating, but that's not defibrillating, is it, at all? Clear. Ivana's waxing her legs. Clear. No. So, but I think you have got a very sort of calm, quiet persona, haven't you, that comes across. I mean, your presence in a room, I think automatically when I've met you at gigs, when we've been perhaps at the Ventnor Exchange, you've always got this kind of just peace and calm that happens around you, and the rest of us are sort of panicking and getting nervous, and yet you seem to just be able to bring this superb quality that you have.
I worked at one point not so long ago with a guy named Mark, and he noticed that I was very calm often, but he also saw the other side to me, and he described me as a swan. So, like, above the water, I appear calm and quite elegant, but underneath, my little legs are like paddling away. So
do we ever see that?
Maybe an illusion.
So do how often do you show that paddling side upside down, if you like?
Maybe once a month.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It depends how well I know someone. And
I had a job once which I found very stressful. So the way I dealt with it was to be uber calm. And I'm not, as you know, a particularly calm person.
I don't know.
But and my boss used to say, you're so laid back. You're virtually horizontal. And she thought this was a really a good thing. And it gave her a lot of comfort. But I thought, if only you knew. And I used to go, yes, I am. As I sort of floated out the door, then rushed to the toilet and have a nervous breakdown. But it was all an illusion. But it kind of acting calm. Kept me calm, it was like that paint a smile on sort of act.
You
be it until you really can
until you become it.
And it just might work.
I do have a copy of the little book of calm in my pocket as well, that
I know.
advice.
My friend Rowan Kandapa wrote the opposite of that, the little book of stress, which was really funny. Brilliant little book. So far more like my life than the little book of calm. So you also we'll go back to your poetry, because to me that's what you that's your gift to the rest of us, really.
Thank you.
And to be in an audience when you perform, I think is really joyful. And to go to one gig, if Ivana is on the gig, you want to be there. It really is a treat, and no matter how you're feeling, Ivana will always lift you. So just a little tip from me: if you see her on a spoken word or a poetry gig, get yourself down there. And it's what date for your diary. She's going to be on, you'll be on at Cowspeak, won't you, on the 1st of September at the Anchor. I know it's a little way away, but it's only a few weeks now, so get that in. So what time is that, Ivan?
Usually kicks off around about 8, and it's a comedy night. It's
brilliant.
Like nothing you've ever experienced. I've actually never performed there, so I'm kind of very excited about that.
Who heads that up?
Adam Gattrell and Bobbin and Huxley the Magician are all involved in
So it'd be a crazy night then.
It's crazy. It's a mix of magic and comedy and music, spoken word, and just utter foolishness.
Yeah.
With a few quizzes chucked in with really rubbish prizes that, sorry Adam, but are brilliant in their rubbishness.
And do they get a good audience?
Yeah, great. It's out in the little back room of the Anchor and it's always full and it's really good fun. I'd really recommend it anyway.
Super.
Without me. Yeah.
Okay, and is that the 1st of September? What's that?
That's Thursday, the 1st of September.
Okay.
Usually from about 7, 8 o'clock.
Super, right. Yeah. That's definitely one for the diary.
Cows speak.
Lovely,
yeah.
Okay. But you also, you've said you work with young people down at the foyer in Ryde.
Yeah, just next to the library.
Okay, so how did you get into that?
I haven't actually been on the island very long. I came back last February after having been away for 6 years, and I knew that I wanted to get into support work with young people. So I was working at a place called 54 St John's, which is again supported housing for 16 to 25 year olds.
Right.
And that contract came to an end and I was looking for something else, and yeah, this position opened up at the foyer, again support work for 16 to 25 year olds that have, all of them really, had just a really rocky upbringing. Mm. And
are these possibly people that have come out of care?
Yeah.
And then
they're
moved
kind of all under the radar.
Yes.
And they're referred to us by external agencies. You can make self-referrals, but mostly it's young people that are already in care or receiving extra support. And we provide them with a home. So a lot of you probably know the foyer. It's a massive block of 45 rooms.
Yeah.
And they receive 24-hour support for whatever might come up. The main aim is to get them engaged in something, so ideally getting them into education, training, apprenticeships, employment, and then accessing any kind of primary health services.
Okay, so how often would you have your clients with you for?
So we all have clients that we work with closely.
So it'd be like a key support worker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I would aim to meet with them for at least 1 hour a week for a sit down, really kind of find out what's going on in their lives and see how I can support them or signpost them to other agencies. But then, I mean, we deal with all of the residents. There's 45 residents. And it's just constant.
And do they stay a certain amount of time?
They can stay up to 2 years.
Oh, wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah. But people can stay from, like, you know, 3 weeks to 2 years.
It's that crisis point in their life, really, where they need that help to move
forward. It's when they need it, really.
Yeah. So it must be very rewarding. You must have...
I love it. I do it for myself, really. It teaches me so much every day about kind of the real challenges that people face. And I learn a lot about myself as well, about my limits and how ignorant I am, which is really great to be reminded of that on a daily basis.
But that's how you learn, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Once you can identify those gaps, you can sort of move forward.
And
like you said, then you're in a better position to help other people. Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
So do you keep in touch with those people that move on? Are you able to sort of track how they do? And
I obviously have not experienced that yet at the foyer. I've only been there 6 weeks, 7 weeks, I think. But where I was before at 54 St John's, I've really tried to keep in touch with the residents there because they become your friends, really.
Of course,
and you care about them outside of work.
And you must have a build-up, a real bond of trust.
Yeah, yeah, because they open up. They open up to you.
At their most vulnerable, I see.
Yeah, yeah, and some less than others.
Yeah.
Some you really have to coax it out of them.
But they must come with a myriad of issues.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say I'm predominantly dealing with mental health and, like, substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And just, which all relates back to the lack of self-esteem. I think that's really the main issue we're dealing with. Self-esteem, boosting that as much as possible.
And how do you go about lifting somebody that feels they're worthless?
I think you want to figure out, sometimes very directly, sometimes more subtly, what they love.
Where their passion is.
Yeah, what they get a kick out of.
Yes.
And once you can figure out what that is and bring their attention to it, because they might not realise, then things kind of, can and get moving from there.
And have any of them taken the writing option? Is that something you would encourage?
We're actually in the process of trying to organise a writing group at the foyer. So we want to get a few residents together, just a small group, mm-hmm. and do like a series of workshops. Writing for practical reasons, so getting them used to kind of formats of professional or official emails and letters, and then also maybe get them into a bit of creative writing, a bit of journal writing, so they can reflect on their thoughts and feelings. And
do you ever share your work with them?
No. It's not something I've ever really spoken about at work. I mean, my colleagues knew that I was coming today. No one else did, because I didn't realise it would be live. So.
But maybe that would be, you know, inspirational for some of your clients.
Maybe. I know that there are a few ex-residents that have gone on to do really brilliant things, and they've been inspiration to current residents, and they come back and
Oh, that must be fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. It's really important.
Because I'm sure when you can see somebody that you can relate to directly and think, that's kind of, they were me, they were in my position, or very similar, and now look, you know.
Look what they're doing.
Yeah, that must really give a lot of hope.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, brilliant. So we've talked about their inspiration. Who's, and I know sort of people watching, but have you got any favourite poets or authors that are your inspiration?
Yeah, so I've just started reading East of Eden by Steinbeck. It's just reminding me how much I love him. I think he's my favourite author. I like the fact that he doesn't rush at all. and I feel like he really loves his characters.
Yes.
I think he's...
This is one of the great classics, isn't he?
Brilliant.
He did Of Mice and Men.
Of Mice and Men, Grapes of Wrath.
For O-level, and that's showing my age.
Yeah. No, we had to do that as well.
Did you?
GCSEs.
Yes.
And who else do I like? I love Haruki Murakami. I don't know if you know him.
No.
He's still living. He's a Japanese author. And he does like... I don't know. You think that it's real, because everything he's describing is possible, and then he throws in something that makes you realise that he's created a completely new universe that is not like this one. I don't know, where maybe there are two moons or cats speak. Just really little things.
I know.
Well, that's not
little.
I
know where
all.
You are. I know where you're coming from. That sort of surreal thing.
So he's another inspiration.
And is he a living writer? Sorry.
He's living. I think he lives in Tokyo. Steinbeck, pretty sure he's dead.
Not, yeah.
yeah.
But his work lives on.
He lives on through that, yeah. Those would be my main authors. And in terms of poetry, I just discovered, I brought one of his anthologies in today, Hikmet, Nazim Hikmet. He's a Turkish poet. Mm-hmm. Do you know him?
No.
He's been described as like the poet of Turkey, 20th century poet of Turkey. He spent the last 13 years of his life in exile, and 13 years before that in prison. He was a political prisoner,
right,
for basically just speaking out against
the powers. And is that what he writes about, presumably?
Yeah, but he also writes about the little things that he sees out of his prison cell window, and all the things he remembers about life outside. And his poetry is really hopeful and positive, despite the fact that he's seen so much injustice and experienced so much injustice.
And does he translate his own work, or is it translated into English?
So he died in 63, I think,
right.
And it's been translated into 50 languages, as well as English.
It must be quite a job to translate poetry, mustn't it? It must be hard enough to translate fiction,
definitely,
and convey the author's meaning, but a poem is so personal,
so personal. And you're limited by the amount of words you can use, so that's really a challenge. He doesn't use any kind of rhyme or meter. It's total free verse, so that would have maybe been a bit
slightly
easier.
Okay, and what about you? I know you've come across someone who's quite close, very close to their family.
Mm.
So would you say your mother's a big inspiration?
Yeah, my whole family, actually. They come up a lot in my poems. Just really appreciate them. They're why I'm here on the Isle of Wight. I think I'd probably be somewhere else if they weren't here.
Mm.
But yeah, they've been really, really important.
And they encourage your writing, presumably.
Yeah, they turn up my gigs. My nan is like my number one groupie. She's always my plus
lovely.
One when I get an extra festival
Fantastic.
Ticket.
Fantastic. How old's your nan?
I'm sorry, Nan, that I don't know the exact age. Maybe 83.
Oh, God, love her. Brilliant.
She's brilliant. She, you know, she sings, she paints, she gardens, she plays the cello. She's, yeah.
So it's all kind of come through in you, too,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Yeah, she's a very inspiring woman.
Mm. Brilliant, brilliant. So have you got another poem you'd like to share with us now?
Yeah, I do.
Because I think it would be lovely to use this time for people to really get to know you and your work. And I think hearing your work, people get to know the real you, don't
they?
Okay.
I'll read a poem that I wrote recently, which is called You Could Have Been a Poem.
Off you go.
Sweet, warm smell of bread. Tiptoeing up the walls, crawling into my could have been a poem. And a sound like the world ending on the 24th stroke of my lower molars, something between ting and pop, could have been a poem. Hovering at the front door, avoiding an angry baker, poem. In the street, four friends swaying, could have been a poem too. And the lady at the bank with trousers the colour of skin. Poem. A small wet dog wrapped in a blanket, carried under an arm, poem, and the heavy sky. Sound of sea, poem, curve of street, poem, sweet shop selling plastic spades for sand, poem. It's dipping down, I'm on the bus. A pool of rain is growing to the left of my left foot. A boy dressed as Spider-Man clings onto his mother as they run for cover, wizened gabble of grannies grateful for brollies, and the goths who have been waiting for this moment their whole lives, for the rain. Dark hair is wet, but wet hair is darker. Streams of blue poem dye trailing blue poem scars down blue poem necks. Poem. I'm smiling, poem, for the tomatoes which I was too lazy to water, sighing for all the open windows, and you, poem, poem, poem.
Lovely, that's lovely.
I messed that one up. It was supposed to be blue dye trailing down pale necks, not blue dye trailing down blue necks. I've not seen any blue necks at Newport bus station.
We don't have any avatars. But I don't think anybody but you noticed that. I think it was really lovely. I think we were just all kind of captivated by the imagery you'd created. So thank you. That was gorgeous.
Thank you, Jane.
So we're going to hear some more from Ivana after this break. Stay tuned.
The Lunchtime Social Debate, brought to you by Real Employment Law Advice, your legal lighthouse guiding you through a sea of employment law. A solicitor's firm with a difference. Go to realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk for more information.
This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
Retinitis pigmentosa is a disease of the eye that leads to loss of vision and blindness. It causes the retina, the light-sensitive part of the eye, to degenerate and sight to be lost. RP Fighting Blindness works hard to stimulate and fund cutting-edge research to find a cure or treatment. The local RP Fighting Blindness group on the Isle of Wight has been established since 2006. If you live on the island and you'd like to get involved, please contact Colin MacArthur at talktalk.net or make a donation at www.rpfightingblindness.com. .org.uk/IOW.
Real Employment Law Advice is your friendly employment law specialist, giving support, guidance and advice to employers and employees who are having problems at work. We pride ourselves in looking beyond the law to find practical, stress-free solutions that suit your needs or the needs of your business. For reliable, experienced, affordable legal advice, go to adviceforemployers.co.uk or for individuals, adviceforemployees.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Maggie Curry, transformational coach and consultant. Stress, low morale, physical exhaustion, toxic relationships all can cause damage and can make you feel invisible. You'll begin building your new positive future working with me and learn to understand that we are living in the feeling of the principle of thought taking form in the moment. Every one of us was born for greatness and we knew that, until we forgot. Working with me will help you to remember again. When you start to see the true power of thought and its relationship to your way of observing life, your transformation will begin. Get in touch today on 754666 or email me at hello@maggiecurry.co.uk.
It's James and Judy here, the island's version of Richard and Judy. We've been married for longer than Judy cares to mention, haven't we?
That's true, James.
And together we run Ramshackle Pop-Up Cinema from our Global Nerve Centre in Bembridge. We're bringing lots of bickering, wittering...
That's me.
...and twittering...
That's James, the technical one.
...to Vectis Radio every Wednesday afternoon from 1 to 4. And that's our show, Ramshackle Mashup. It's a heady mix of music, previews and reviews of things going on the island, including arts, and breaking news about local eateries, cycling and special places.
And films.
Stay social and get in touch. It's /Vectis Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate, brought to you by Real Employment Law Advice, your legal lighthouse guiding you through a sea of employment law. A solicitor's firm with a difference. Go to realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk for more information.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratt Falls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, poet Ivana Popov.
Hello again.
Hi, welcome back, Ivana. It's been lovely listening to you and your poems, and we're going to hear lots more about from you, I think, over the next half hour and get to know you. You were mentioning that you're going to be doing a really special gig at Cowspeak on the 1st of September at the Anchor, and you said that was a comedy gig. Now, I've been in audiences when you've sung and you've done it. I can never say this word, a cappella.
Yes.
Yeah, and yeah. I totally admire anybody that can do that.
I know
where
this is going.
You don't have to, but maybe if you felt like it, perhaps a bit later in the show or whenever, you know.
It would
be really good. I could
sing you a very short unfinished song from the perspective of a wasp.
Oh, okay. Yes.
That's the only one that I could really do a cappella now.
I think that would resonate with a lot of people. I think we've all been bothered by them. Yes.
Oh, no, but this is empathising with the wasp.
Okay, well, let's hear it from their perspective then.
Okay. Yeah. So, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. It's called... This is the kind of stuff I do alone in my shower.
Then it needs to be broadcast.
Okay. It's called If Only I Made Honey. And the idea is that I will create an album of songs from the perspective of different animals that have been chastised by humans for just being themselves, really. So I've got a song about sharks and spiders, pigeons.
Oh, I really like that.
Yeah,
thought.
So this wasp, this is about a wasp because, you know, wasps, they didn't do anything to be wasps.
No. I can remember doing, I worked for the National Trust years ago and I had to go down to... place near Brown Sea Island and look at with the National Trust wasps down sort of at grassroots level, literally. So I spent the whole of my day on my hands and knees with this expert and I got really sort of tired and sunburned, and in the end we were talking about all manner of little insects and blades of grass and flora and fauna, and like I say, tired, hungry and irritable. You know, I said to him, what is the point of a wasp?
Oh.
Yeah, didn't go down well. Didn't go down well at all.
Yeah. You can't say that to a conservationist.
No, he said it was all about the food chain, I think.
Yeah, and ecosystems.
And they had a real role to play.
Yeah.
So I felt very chastened and put firmly in my place. So let's hear it. Hear it for the wasp.
This is called... If Only I Made Honey. You have to imagine that I am a wasp.
Okay.
Would you love me if I were kinder? If I didn't make your skin swell red? My fluffy cousin, he's such an altruist. He stings to save the hive and drops down dead. But I won't do it. No, I won't do it. 'Cause I'm a fighter. I'm a warrior. My fluffy cousin, he's so much sweeter. But I will not be a slave. If only I made honey, would you love me? Would you love me? If only I made honey, would you care? Isn't that finished?
Oh, I love it, though. It's just, and I love thank that. You. You've got a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
So do you work with that a lot?
I've been getting into it a lot more lately. I've got the ukulele out and...
Were you in the festival?
I wasn't. I missed it. I was in Turkey at a wedding, which was also brilliant.
Were you playing your ukulele at the Turkish wedding?
I wasn't. No, I was just very drunk.
Oh, okay. I don't like to think of you as very drunk.
I was marrying the groom, probably.
One of those, was it?
Yeah, it was one of those, but hey, oh, quiet. No, they'll never hear this.
Okay, was he an ex?
No, just a man I fell in love with. But, you know, hey-ho, there are lots of them.
did he know that you were in love with him at one point?
I'm pretty sure he felt it, like, radiating out of my pores.
As long as the bride didn't feel it.
I'm not sure about that. I can't speak for her.
No, we've got gorgeous voice, and I love this idea of a whole album of misrepresented creatures and animals.
Yeah. So I'm working on the cockroach one at the moment.
Yeah,
they're
good
definitely
one.
Like
hated.
Know, yeah. Hated.
Yeah, nobody's got a good word to say for them, have they?
No one, not even Kafka. Did he become a cockroach? Was it a cockroach?
Yeah, it rings a bell. And blue bottles?
Something, yeah. Blue bottles, they're beautiful, but we hate them.
Not nice,
they
though.
They like spreaders. Glimmer in the sun.
Oh. You just don't want landing on your dinner, though, do
That's
you?
That's true.
Not so beautiful when they're on your lettuce leaf.
No. I'd probably just flick it off and eat it.
Okay.
I'm not, yeah.
No.
It won't kill me.
You may.
It might kill me.
Yes, exactly.
But I really like lettuce, so I'm not going to let that stop me.
Scorpions.
I've sat next to a scorpion.
Right.
Yeah, on a beach. I definitely didn't feel comfortable doing that.
No. So I would imagine you're kind of in a swan was doing overtime, it being very calm.
Yeah,
and
yeah. But no, it left me. I think it was probably terrified.
Presumably not a beach on the Isle of Wight.
No, this would be in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah. She says so casually. Yeah. This would be in the Bahamas, darling. Where else? So a little bird told me that you were born in the Bahamas,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah, I'm Bahamian.
Not many of us can say that.
Oh,
so
no.
You were born in the Bahamas and you stayed there, I think, for 9 years.
Yeah, I lived there till I was 9.
Okay, so why would anybody...
This is what everyone asks.
...make the transition from the Bahamas to the gorgeous Isle of Wight, as lovely as it is, but you're just not that many hours of sunshine. So what happened?
I can explain that. Well, first of all, we have to blame my mum. She's from the Isle of Wight.
Okay.
But actually, like, there was no pain in that move at all. Like, as a 9-year-old, I was just really excited to finally be in a classroom where, like, there were pictures on the walls and we were growing beans and, like, dressing up as Romans. And there was none of that at school in the Bahamas.
Right.
We just had this really stale North American curriculum. And the crime got really bad and... Mum just thought, right, I'm taking them out of here and giving them, like, a good British education.
Yes,
So, yeah, there was no pain in it, and I'm really grateful for it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, most Brits sort of shivering away in England, and we think that's paradise, and that's where, if we could all afford to go, we'd all go off to.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's so beautiful once you're under the sea. The land, the land, it's very, very flat. It's all limestone. I think the highest point is something like maybe 25 metres. I might be totally wrong, but it's really flat. And so it gets beautiful under the sea and in the kind of outer islands. The capital has been just destroyed by tourism.
Right.
Still has a certain charm, but I think
Nassau?
Nassau. Yeah.
And... So under the sea, obviously, there are no people.
No,
so
it's
are you
wonderful.
Someone that, you know, kind of, you know, keeps people at a distance?
No. I love people.
Mm-hmm.
But I like fish too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a totally different space, isn't it? And absolutely different world. And
it's brilliant.
You just forget everything.
I love it. Yeah.
I came face to face with a turtle about this time last year when I was. On holiday, I just burst into tears.
Yeah,
I'm not quite
happens.
Sure why.
No, that's happened to me a lot. Bits of coral burst into tears, like weeping at like a bit of seaweed.
Yes, they turn their little heads to you, and you know they're just so so lovely.
I think turtles especially, because you know kind of how far they travel and how lonely their lives are.
And they kind of give off that aura of loneliness, don't they?
Wisdom as well.
Of total wisdom. Yeah. So I was following this one. He was just a little bit ahead of me. And they kind of float and fly, don't they? They do this strange thing. They waft through
the
water.
They waft.
And I thought, he's leading me somewhere. You know, I'm now going to discover the meaning of life. This is, you know, obviously where I thought I was heading. So like a fool, I'm sort of behind him. I think I'm doing really well. I'm keeping up. And then he led me around the bay where, needless to say, I did not discover the meaning of life. But I thought, you know, there's still a chance. And then, so that we'd been going probably about 20 minutes. And then he just accelerated. And just went, you know, like a jet ski off his shot. And there was no way I could keep up with him. But it was like he'd been playing with me. It was like, well, now I'm really bored of you. You can go. Yeah, I've got better places, people to see, things to do, and it doesn't include you. Yeah. So they do give you something different, don't they?
Definitely.
To people. Yeah. So obviously you're finding inspiration from people, from the little things, and animals that really you're kind of putting a whole personality and your own perspective on them, aren't you? Looking at things from their view.
Well, not at all. I'm looking at things from my view, really. I have no idea what a wasp's thinking. I probably not thinking at all. It doesn't need to. It's very human centric still. But I don't know. I just feel bad for all these animals that we like, I don't know, spray and squish and swat, and maybe I'm unrealistic. Sometimes we need to, you know, in the name of agriculture and feeding people.
And health, I guess.
Mosquitoes are like what, the number one killer in the world.
And the latest
more than terrorists.
Zika virus, which is just horrific, isn't it? You know, so then that does need to be controlled.
But definitely.
So when you're working with the young people, and I don't know, you must have so many ideas that you want to impart. You know, I can imagine you must be such a rich person emotionally for them to deal with, because you're working on lots of different levels in your own head and heart, aren't you?
Actually, all of that goes to sleep when I'm with them.
Uh-huh.
I think it needs to. It needs to be about them. So I like to just be a kind of, I guess like a cup, but an empty cup, and just let them know that they can trust me, and that there will be no judgment.
Yes.
And I don't go on about any of this stuff really with them, because I think to a lot of people it's like, can make a gap, you know?
Yes, I know, so, a sort of aspirational, do you get what I mean? That you're working on a different level.
Yeah. And I can be, like, I'm a bit extreme in some of my views, so, all of that stays. As soon as I walk through the front door, that part of me kind of goes to sleep, and actually my colleagues don't see it either.
But there's obviously
bits of it will come out, you know, or break into song.
Yeah, but there's a sensitivity about you, isn't there? And your observational powers, which I imagine are two qualities that you use in your writing, and you would need you're working with these vulnerable young people.
Yeah, I think it's with the young people, and actually with anyone, it's like just being aware of their comfort zone.
Yes.
And deciding, okay, do I want to challenge it, or do I want to allow them to be as comfortable as possible? And then, like, changing. I think I'm a different person with every single person I'm with.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Just adjusting yourself for the sake of...
I think that makes perfect sense. Yeah. And I think everybody operates like that to different degrees, don't they?
Yeah.
It's very rare. Some people, you can see they're totally consistent.
Yes.
Which is remarkable, isn't it?
I love those people. I don't know how they do it.
I don't know how they do it.
It's wonderful.
And I always, you know, I feel like either I've become, you know, like when I'm with perhaps my mother, very different to when you're with your best friend, which is an extreme, I know. Yeah. But it's even down to how you choose to tell them exactly the same story, you know, whatever had happened on Saturday night.
Yeah.
You will edit and change and the jokes you use or don't use. Yeah, it's very different. Whereas other people, they just go in at the same level to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the shapes. I call them shapes, those people. They have a shape and they keep it.
They're consistent with
that. Yeah, there's shapes and then what is the other? Like,
do you think politicians are like that?
I don't know. I really hope that they're not shapes for the sake of their families.
Yes.
You know, I hope that, what's his name? All of them. Yeah, I hope they're not like they are at home because that'd be intolerable.
Yes.
Be horrible, you know? Yeah.
They Maybe seem, they I think the public face they keep very consistent, don't
yeah,
they?
Or
some of the, you know, the very practice ones, they always have that. You can monitor how they're going to react. You know what they're going to say before they've said it.
I think this is, I was talking about this with someone the other day. I think this is why Jeremy Corbyn is getting so much stick right now, because he's more human than, like, actor.
Mm.
And I guess we're not used to seeing that in the political sphere, you know,
I know what you mean, yes.
He's like a person in front of you, and that, for some reason, I don't know, people doubt it maybe, or I don't know, I'm not into politics really, but that's just an observation.
But I think people are used to certain. And I think even, you know, the wretched Mr. Trump in America, he's breaking all the kind of moulds, isn't he? Not in a good way.
But consistently breaking them. I think that's why he's so popular right now. You know, he's consistently...
But it's very... Even that is so manipulative, isn't it? And it's another ploy, it's another game.
Yeah.
It's another...
Yeah, but he's definitely an actor, right? Yeah.
But people believe that that's the real him, don't they? It's just, it's very, very interesting, all these different approaches. And then Obama comes out and, you know,
he's just
publicly criticises him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You think, yay. Yeah, it's strange times that we live in, isn't it? But then I think, you know, you can go back at any time and people would say exactly the same thing. It's constantly changing. We've got new challenges being thrown at us. And, it's always a difficult time in which to live, I think. But it's interesting you talking about these young people, because we've got a really interesting project here at Vectus. I don't know if you're aware of it. It's the 4Ps project. And if there's anyone listening age 11 to 19, and you're interested in getting into media, it's something really... the 4Ps are presenting, producing, podcasting and promoting. And if you come in here, you can get on the programme. And even if you're up to 25 years old and you've got additional needs, it's an all-encompassing program headed up by Ian Mack. And they come in and, like you were talking about, sort of boosting the confidence and working with that self-confidence. Somebody who's got a very low self-esteem, perhaps, or just wants to get in. But, you know, whatever your interest in it is. And people come in probably sort of very nervous of perhaps reading the news.
Mm.
And then by the end of the week, they're away, you know. Yeah. So it really
sounds
builds
brilliant.
Their confidence. Yes, it's a fantastic programme. So that's something well worth looking into if anyone out there is interested in that sort of thing.
I can definitely think of a few off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Did you say it goes to 25?
It can do.
Okay,
definitely.
Got
additional
I'll
needs. So up to 25, But 11 to 19, and I've met some of them and worked with some of them. They're just brilliant.
Mm.
So, and they get so much out of it.
Yeah,
it's a really valuable program. So going back to what you were saying, you've got some authors and poets that are really inspirational to you. I just thought it'd be really lovely, perhaps somebody that I mean, I've never heard of, it'd be lovely, one of the more unusual poets, if we could hear some of their work.
I'll read you my favorite, favorite poem by this Turkish poet I was talking to you about.
Okay,
his name
lovely.
Is Nazım Hikmet.
And just to be clear, is he still incarcerated or has he been released?
No, he died in 63.
And had he been released at that point?
He had been released, but he was living in exile.
Okay.
So a lot of his poems are really sad about the fact that he's just not able to live in the city that he grew up in and loves. So it's kind of, his poems feel like a homage to Istanbul. This is my favourite one of his. It's really short. He wrote this on the 27th of August 1960.
Thank you.
It's called Loving You. Loving you is like eating bread dipped in salt, like waking feverish at night and putting my mouth to the water faucet, like opening a heavy unlabeled parcel eagerly, happily, cautiously. Loving you is like flying over the sea for the first time, like feeling dusk settle softly over Istanbul. Loving you is like saying I'm alive. Oh, isn't that beautiful?
That's beautiful. And again, you can sort of relate to that thirst, yeah, and that hunger for that other person.
Yeah.
So that's all about love. Are you inspired by love?
Oh, all the time. I'm such a romantic.
Yeah. So have you got what you call a love poem?
I've got lots of them. Yeah. I've got a very short one.
One you'd like to share?
I've got a very short one called Love Poem. Actually, it's the only one I know off by heart.
Okay.
It's, I want to write your name big on the side of a wall and then let the birds poo all over it.
And was that dedicated to anybody in particular?
Oh, nah. No, just all of them. I do have a love poem that's slightly more...
hopeful.
Like hopeful, yeah. Actually, I'll give you a hopeful one. Here we go.
Okay.
If I can find it, just give me 1 second.
But love is so different for everybody, isn't it? But everybody's experience is different. But we could all relate to that broken heart and that jilted dream and that absolute so-and-so that we fell in love with that has let us down mercilessly.
Look at this. This is a sign, I think. Here we go. Here it is. I was going to say I couldn't find my hopeful poem. This is my hopeful love poem.
Thank
you. It's called You Own the World by Loving It. You own the world by loving it, he said to her on a cliff edge turned orange by the sun. He had watched her skip down, stopping here to touch a blade of grass, pausing to look up at the sky, striding and hopping and feeling where the moles had made their homes. You own the world by loving it, he said to her at the sea's edge turned violet by the dusk. And she said nothing. Only her breath tripped and her heart tumbled and her smile carried them both over the edge into the deep, dark water. That's still not very hopeful, is it?
No, I was waiting for the hopeful bit there.
Oh dear.
Your definition of hopeful.
Yeah, a lot of my poems are very, like, quite apocalyptic and...
Is that how you feel about the world?
Yeah, I do. I think we're headed for...
Helen Hancock.
If we keep going the way we're going, then I think, yeah, things are going to be really painful and horrible for a lot of animals and humans. They already are.
Yeah.
And I think it's just going to get worse if we keep going the way we're going.
If you could, if you could rule the world for a day, how would you change that? How would you begin to implement a change?
Oh dear!
No holds barred. What would you want to do straight away? What would you say? Right, we've had enough of this.
I don't want to be cliche.
You don't have to go. You won't be. You can't be. You're not cliche.
Oh, I will be now. So, like, weapons wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
That's cliche.
But it's, I think that's something...
We probably wouldn't have, like, the tobacco industry, that just would never have been invented or propelled by, what's his name? I think it's Edward Bernays who made that, like, an attractive thing to do. There'd be no, like, hair removal industry. There'd be no mass industry of animals. Like, definitely, we'd eat meat if we needed to, if we could, like... look the animal in the eye and kill it and gut it, and that's totally normal. That's what animals do in the wild, so that would happen, but it just wouldn't happen on a massive industrial scale. People would, like, sing in public without being reprimanded, and like, we wouldn't need to drive cars. I don't know, we'd just kind of fly around on wings. I don't know,
like that turtle, just waft.
Yeah, we'd just waft. And people would just trust each other and be like, there'd be no, like, negative news, just be positive news all the time, so that people trusted people and, you know, kindness was kind of just the norm.
That would be a very lovely, beautiful world.
It'd be lovely, it'd be really lovely. But
welcome to Ivana's world.
Yeah, I don't know. Free fruit for all primary school children, and all of that stuff.
But it's all the good stuff. It's just very difficult to implement, isn't it?
Yeah,
on the desk for all sorts of strange reasons that I can't begin to understand. But
we live in tree houses, I think.
Oh, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? But I like totally the idea impractical. Of people trusting one another because that's something.
We'd hitchhike, that's it. We wouldn't have buses, we'd hitchhike.
From a very young age, that has to be kind of drummed out of us not to trust one another.
Yeah, and I think that you can make things simple. I think our actions are made from a point of love or from a point of fear, and I hope. Yeah, I just aim to make all of mine from a place of love rather than fear. So I think if we stop reading so many horrible things in the news, then we'd be taking more actions out of love. And we'd be doing things we want to be doing. And
because often people behave very badly. And then when you look a little bit deeper, it's because they or you are frightened, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're scared, witless. And then that comes across as anger, agitation, whatever.
Or coldness.
And like you say, if somebody doesn't trust you, they're not going to let you in. So it's well, your world does sound wonderful. And it's thank you for sharing it over the past hour.
Probably regret that later.
No, I think why not? You know, why not have a dream and a really lovely dream to aim? And if everybody has their own little world that they can bring that dream to life in, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you so much.
Thank you,
Ivana Popov, for sharing your poetry and your wit and your wisdom.
Thank you.
And I haven't asked you if you have any pratfalls, because pratfall moments, because I don't like to think of you having a pratfall
every
moment. I just like to think of you kind of wafting and being that swan.
No, every day.
Oh, well, you've made me feel an awful lot better about myself.
Definitely.
That's great.
Like, and I definitely don't speak much before I think, so I'll say things. Like right now, I'm already thinking, well, that world I've just, it's totally unrealistic, you know? It's
Well, I think you certainly think
that was maybe a pratfall moment.
I think you think before you write, and like I say, I've certainly enjoyed hearing everything that you've written, so thank you.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you Cowspeak 1st of September at the Anchor.
Ooh,
so
thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And next week, my guests will be Donna Jones, MBE, poet, and a pair of women called the Unruly Baps. And we're all going to be at the Ventnor Fringe. So tune in for that and hear what they've got to say, because I think that would be a bit of a laugh. Okay, been lovely, lovely being with you. News on the way. Stay tuned to Vectis over the weekend. Okay, bye-bye now.